years, what does that all look like? What are the options out there? What are the best practices out there that are already in place? What are the lessons learned from even the new facilities that have been learned and make some adjustments instead of try to put our arms around it?
I'll just say, while I'm out.
Okay.
You're going to talk about it. I know it.
Here's what we're talking about. Facilitate this layout. And that's what we're forward.
That's what you're going to do.
I'm not sure. Definitely interested.
That would be good.
The only bad thing is it costs $2,200.
Do you want that?
Should
you go there for a little bit? Just another example.
Company use.
Here's what we'd like to present.
Out of hand.
Look at it.
Otherwise, it could.
There's got to be a rate, but you can see along the lines, not just what he's talking about here. That would be great. And then it comes in front.
All the way.
I'm fine.
Come on, man. You got text for you. Eventually, I'm leaving.
Well, you just target one of those, and you, as you tell us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm doing this.
Are you even on out here? She's troubled my
hair. No,
all right.
That and they don't appreciate what he's doing. I was going to share something.
Well, sure. Fixing this and that.
All right. Well, welcome everyone. Thank you all for coming. This is our second working in custody, housing and custody working group, and we'll have two more at least. And this one, we're going to try to focus a little bit more on what our current situation is with the current facility and try to address more of the housing custody programs type things that that I think help us make short-term recommendations and long-term recommendations for improvement. What I'd like to do first, if you don't mind, is we'll introduce ourselves up here, but also, if you wouldn't mind, and it may require taking one of these microphones or using that microphone, I'd just like to let everyone know who all's here attending as well, if you don't mind. So my name's Chris Miller, and I'm the working group lead for this housing and custody working group, and the chairman for our overall committee is Michael Borland, who's just joined us now. And on my left, please, Adrian, if you would.
I'm Adrian O'Neill, assistant chief of custody and housing at the jail downtown.
And I'm Dan Lee. I'm director of pre-construction for a local construction company, Perry McCall Construction, here in town.
I'm Lieutenant Michelle Fletcher. I'm a lieutenant of programs in all three facilities.
Tyler Nolan, special projects coordinator with Northeast Florida Regional Council.
Hi, Elisa Worden with HDR, local architecture firm doing healthcare and justice.
Good afternoon, Tracy Dawson with HDR Architecture Group. We're a large-scale engineering and architecture firm that specializes in justice and policy.
Good afternoon, I'm Sarah Royko with Ajax Building Company. We're a construction management firm that focuses on public safety and jails.
I'm Claude Colvin, Chief Deputy Court Administrator for the Fourth Judicial Circuit at the courthouse.
Mike Smith, Court Technology Officer for the Fourth Circuit at the Courthouse.
Charlie Kofer, Public Defender for the Fourth Circuit.
And Melissa Langley with the Barantino Group.
And I think Mr. Oliver's here. He'll probably want to comment toward the
And Bruce, you'd like to introduce yourself to everyone, please?
Certainly.
Turn it off.
I think I turned it off. Bruce Foraker with Watson Commercial Realty. You'll be able to put this up here?
Sure, that'd be great. Thank you.
He may be going to get a new battery.
Okay, what I'd like to do before we move on with the agenda, what I'd like to do before we move on with the agenda is turn it over to our chairman, Councilman Boylan, for any remarks that he may have.
Thank you, Chair Miller. I do appreciate the opportunity. I'm sitting in all the meetings. I sat in adjudication, intake adjudication recidivism this morning. Because these are really the opportunity, because of sunshine, for me to comment on each of these groups and making sure that all the working groups are moving in the right direction. I would advise you, a lot of the conversation we had this morning, and Judge Kofor can speak to that, cross over into some areas. For example, one point of a conversation that we had this morning, and you could speak to it, is the need for an infirmary in a housing facility like this one, which we presently don't have the wherewithal. We also talked about the medical examination areas and some of the other things. So when you think about housing, you have to branch, as we talked about last time, into those other areas. Just trying to be consistent to make sure each of the committee, and I do want to make certain that you and others appreciate the fact that, although we'd like to look at mid-January as a target for the culmination and bringing back together the group to focus on the next level of conversations, and we are elastic enough to say if you need more time than the next month and a half or 2 months, then we can certainly make sure that's possible for you. Beyond that, I just want to make sure so that we're consistent. And I know that a couple of folks from the construction companies are here, that once they hear, as we are doing with the working group I'm heading at the Police Memorial Building, to understand and truly appreciate what the needs are and provide them an opportunity to come back to you and share with you ideas and facilities that they have already are in the process of building or have built in that process. And lastly, I want to thank Chief O'Neill?
Yeah, Assistant Chief O'Neill.
Assistant Chief O'Neill and Annie from over at Northeast Florida Regional Council for the last two pieces of information, which was a nice overview of what's presently housed in the various facilities around. Having those numbers hard and fast in that form was really very helpful to me to understand the scope and the magnitude of the housing challenges that we face as a community. Thank you. That's it. And if I do pick on you at all, just I told Peloso this morning, I'm doing it to everybody, okay?
No, that's certainly quite all right. Thank you very much. I wanted to next go into just letting you all know and just so you can appreciate, and I recommend it if you're able to do it and you're very interested in being involved in this process. There were five of us that went through the jail. Again, this is my second time in about a month and a half going through on a tour, and Assistant Chief O'Neill led us on this, and I think we had Bruce, yeah, Mr. Lee and
Mike.
Yeah, that was the group. Went through 2 days ago, and some of what we're going to be talking about today continue to go into some of the areas that we hadn't covered previously, especially the programs areas. We saw many of them firsthand, at least from a facility perspective, what's currently there and how that does or doesn't support that need to have, good, strong programs in the facilities as well as these other areas. So what I'm going to try to do here is I'm going to turn it over to Assistant Chief O'Neill, and we're going to go through some of these areas, and I'll announce those areas. There's one that I added in from our last time that we didn't talk about to start off. However, I'd like on the record for this update. And again, there may be some overlap with other groups, and I feel for Chairman Boylan here. He's got to hear some of these same things over and over again. But I want to make sure we get everything on the record. And as I've said before, I think overlap in working group efforts is a good thing, because that makes sure or makes it very unlikely that we have any gaps that we've missed. And then the good folks at NEFRC and others will help us be able to pull this together into a good cohesive report of recommendations for both the short term and the long term. One of those areas I wanted to hit was, and to be able to give an update on where we are with our jail, are the ADA efforts that are ongoing in the facility. So if you would share a little bit with us about that.
Right. As far as our ADA, we are currently ADA compliant. We just completed that project over the past year. So each floor of our facility has ADA cells for inmates, population that arrive at the facility. Was completed over the past year.
Are there areas that, even though you're in compliance, are there areas like we can look at going forward that, you know, the folks, facility folks have said, or you know of, that we need to pay attention to as far as the new structure and things that need to be incorporated into that new structure?
Well, the new structure, we will, like Commissioner said before, with an infirmary, that was something that we included on our Mercedes-Benz model of something that we wanted for a male, a separate facility, female, separate facility. But each facility that's being constructed now are meeting the ADA criteria as they're being built, being constructed. Like I said, with the population growth of the city, you know, our population inside increases. So we will need, you know, more than what we have now currently for the 88 bedding that we currently have.
Okay, and then shifting gears, you, as Chairman Boylan talked about, you had given us a lot of the statistics, the numbers, the data, that gives us a good base for what our current facility holds, and that you're in charge of there, and what those challenges are. I don't think we touched on, and I don't know if you have this available, but the projections. And the reason I bring up projections and trends is because, for example, on our tour 2 days ago, you know, Assistant Chief O'Neill talked about how at one time, and this was for a long time, we only had one half of one floor was for female inmates. And now we have a full floor that's busting at the seams, if that's, you know, appropriate to call it that. But, you know, where we're pushing, you know, the limits on capacity for that one floor. So there's an obvious big change, and then that takes away from, you know, the other space that you have available for the other inmates that's there as well. And so I just wondered if you've got more on the projection trend side of things that you could share with us.
Yes, for the projection, we have the projections of Florida population by county by the Florida Department of Transportation. And for the year of 2020, the estimated population of Jacksonville would have been 986,000. And this trend goes up to 2045. So each year, each 5 years, it's showing that it is going up by at least 3%. So in 2045, our population in Jacksonville will be 1.2 million people. And that would still, our population at the jail right now is over 3,500. So we would, in all three facilities, so we would still need more room than we have now. Our current structure is supposed to hold 2,189 inmates. We are currently over 2,600 in that facility. So that's stretching all of our classifications. Our classification, we have to adjust certain places where we can house each classification. So those issues are going to continue to be greater as time goes.
So you all have used a similar percentage increase, 3%. Is that what you've used for what you're expecting population-wise? Yes. I know that's just a general kind of approach, but I just wanted to bring that up to just be able to emphasize, you know, our current situation before we can get to the point where we have a more adequate facility. You know, it's more than likely going to increase, the population is going to increase in the current facility year over year. And so we're going to have to factor that into any adjustments that we make as well. Thank you for that. I'd like the next, and we may be bouncing around here, and I apologize if we do that, but I have a listing here of other areas that I'd like to cover. And then if anybody who was on the tour, if you would like to chime in or add additional comments, but as far as the food preparation and service, I'd like to talk about that a little bit, given our current facility and the challenges or the difficulties because of the overpopulation and the current structure and the kitchen and other facilities that we have.
Well, speaking with the food service personnel, we are the major issue that we are continuing to have is the repair of the kitchen equipment, keeping that up and running. When certain things, like we have a big dishwasher, once that dishwasher goes down, we have to go away from the regular trays and go to styrofoam trays, and that incurs a bigger bill for the city. We have to pay out for what those cost. Just getting repairs in, this is like a weekly thing with the ovens and the dish machine and the plumbing that's going on. And at times we have the backups, you know, the floods that you may hear about on the news, that at the backup, it'll come up in the kitchen. So once we have to shut the kitchen down, sanitize, and get all of that stuff cleaned up before we can get back into service. So it's a lot of the down on the tour. We walked through the kitchen area and was getting ready to go around a certain area, and there was a big puddle of water, and it was because one of the drains was covered over from the existing floor that we have, so they have to use a squeegee to, you know, move that water. So we have different issues that's moving around the kitchen.
But in terms of square footage and resources, yes, et cetera, for the future facility, I know Randy White's committee's working group is focusing on those concerns, yes, to make sure he's aware of that. But as it relates to a growing facility, is the in a perfect world, if the existing facility were fully operational, is it sufficient to serve the 2,600 folks you're presently incarcerated?
It is sufficient enough with good equipment. Okay. Right now, the equipment is, you know, needs to be.
But if we assume things will grow, you might see something a percentage larger, both in terms of equipment and space for a future facility.
Right, we would need. And that would be another thing. We'd have a separate area for a kitchen, much bigger than what we have now, because I know the dream thing would be to have a facility. The facility is going to be much bigger. Well, the population should be more than what we have now. So, say, between 4,000 and 7,000. So that kitchen would have to be much bigger than what we currently have now.
And I think there are other related issues like, you know, the hot water seems to be an issue almost every time, you know, the subject comes up of the boilers and others. It's just across the board, the maintenance and the things that Councilman White is more focused on. But I think that just all compounds the concerns by not having the maintenance that we probably should have had, and, you know, don't want to go back. We just need to look at where we are now and, you know, how do we go forward. But it is a reality that those maintenance shortfalls have kind of put us in this place. And a lot of times they're serving, you know, they're having to serve, you know, all cold meals, sandwiches, whatever, when any one of these breaks down, which happens on a regular basis. And I'd also like to welcome our City Council President, Ron Salem. Sir, is there anything you'd like to share with the group?
No, thank you.
Okay, thank you for attending.
Chris, in observing and talking through our visit the other day, you talked about in past times you had 30-some people on a maintenance staff. The facility is getting older every day, so you have more problems. But now, I understand, you only have 8 on the maintenance staff. So there's no way that 8 people can keep up with what 30-some people used to do as this facility gets older and you have more and more problems with mechanical systems, plumbing systems, and all that. So that's one area that should be considered. How do you source maintenance? Is it by having your own people, or do you have specialist subcontractors on some kind of a contract basis to come in and help manage those things and take the load off these 8 people so that they can manage and maintain it right?
Actually, it's about 5 people that's working our maintenance area now. We used to have a whole team, and they were... No, can't remember if they were around the clock, but I know we had someone overnight. But right now we have people that work from probably 6:30 to about 3 or 3:30, and after that we have no one in the facility. So we're when something breaks loose, we have to call an on-call person. It takes a couple hours to get there, and you know we're managing that while we're there. So it would be great to have that assistance overnight.
Well, and some of that, I would guess, you know, has to do with facility itself and who can, you know, using the space you have and offices and other things. I'm sure there are other related things there, as we probably could go more into that. But I think Councilman White and others are going to be looking more into those details. But I thank you for bringing that up, because it's important to talk about. And, you know, any one of these trails we go down may help us, exploring them may help us make things better, especially the short-term part could really help. So thank you for that. The next thing I'd like to touch on, and this is getting into the programs area, the DCPS schooling efforts that we have that the jail is responsible for providing, especially for the juveniles. And I saw each level, each floor has its own classroom, if you will. But I saw there are some obvious challenges with not only the facility itself, but also the capacity of those facilities. If you'd like to talk about some of those challenges, that'd be great. Well, thank you.
Okay. Some of the challenges that the school, Duval County School System, is facing, they recently took the SATs, and the SATs are important for them to receive their diplomas. Well, the state now, they're going to online. We have no capability to provide them with online access. Like, they have the virtual classes or anything requiring internet access, we can't provide it, because we can't let anybody on JSO servers. So they can't get on our servers, so they have no way to access the internet. and they have like those plug-in systems, but a lot of the spots in the jail are dead, so they don't have the access to access the internet or any type of capabilities. And then with our population instead of growing, so in those classrooms, we only can hold like about 25 people. And now with COVID, that's even smaller because we've downsized the number of people who can be in those classrooms due to not trying to spread.
So talk a little bit about your population that are served by these programs. I'm just trying to get a sense of how I appreciate the issue of online access. Mm-hmm. But tell me about the program itself. How many people are involved with it? How often?
We got about 35 different programs. The one I'm talking about particularly is the school, because right. These are juveniles and adults that are still going to school to get their diplomas.
For the different programs, do you use the same rooms, the same facilities?
Yeah, for the different programs, you use the same rooms.
So how many rooms are there presently for
you
programs?
You have a room on each floor. So you have a room on, we have a room on 6, 5, 4, 3. 2 is for our classrooms, and that's another challenge for the teachers because the teachers are in the rooms in the back on 2 East and 2 West. But just like I say, they're unable to get access to the internet.
And typically, how many students are each of those classrooms?
Typically, we might have about 30.
Okay. And on the other floors, the programs, how many typically do they are?
Typically, it's about, just like I said, the room only holds 25.
Gotcha.
So they push it. But now, since COVID, we've downsized that to like about 15.
Gotcha.
Have you come back out of that, given we are at a different place, even though COVID, yes, is still out there?
Yeah, we upped the numbers from 10 to 15.
So you're at 15?
Yeah, 15.
So what happens with those other students that would normally be there?
Like with some programs, they would just have to, their programs are constantly running. So once they complete, like they might have a program that lasts about 3 weeks. So once that program ends, then we just put out another flyer and get more in, and that's how we get them in. But once the program starts, they're just stuck with those 15 people because we can't put anybody else in that class.
So you have, in a sense, a waiting list.
Right.
For students.
For students.
Right. Okay. If you could take a note, if you don't mind, and get those numbers, those would be helpful, of the number of students, both youth or juveniles and adults, and how many you have in the various DCPS programs, and then
other programs as well.
And yes, and other programs. That would be very helpful.
And also, we need we have a GED lab. It's very small that we have to test because we have a partnership with the city where they provide GED, where they get their GED. That's separate from Duval County School. So we have to have that room secure because it's through Pearson View. So we have to have certified people in there when they're administering tests. So we need, I think we only have about 4 computers for that. So if we had multiple people, over 4 people trying to take this test, that's a challenge for us also.
Okay, and have you had any concerns with them being able to get enough teachers to be able to support the programs?
Yeah, now, with Duval County, that's a problem we're facing with them because they're down 3 teachers with the Duval County Public School. They need an English teacher, a social studies teacher, and an ESC teacher. And an ESC teacher is very important, because we have a lot of students that fall under that criteria. And you have to have an ESC teacher, so they're still looking for one.
Okay. Thank you. While you're speaking, please, whatever you had to say. And if you want to, you could just roll into some of the other programs you were prepared to talk about.
And I know when they was talking about infirmary, we need something also for mental health. We need a place for the mental health because when the mental health come in, they're really challenging because they do a lot of strange stuff, and those cells are designed more to hurt them than to help them because they're not like your common inmate. And they got a lot of sharp objects in there, you know, like the bed and the metal tables and stuff like that. So we need some housing really for our more challenging inmates. And like they like to flood the cells. When they flood the cells, we have no way of getting all that water out because there's no drainage systems in there. And when they build a new jail, maybe they need to think about putting drainage systems inside those cells because a lot of them do a lot of flooding. And all that stuff just goes out everywhere, and we just stuck with a big mess.
And currently, do you know the numbers of inmates in the mental health areas of the
That's picked up because we have population. Basically a whole side with mental health, nothing but mental health.
Chris, can I jump in?
Yes, sure. Yes, sir.
I know a little bit about the mental health issue over there. I think about 40% of the inmates are on some psychotropic drug, antidepressant, antipsychotic of some sort. And I agree that as we look at a new facility, there needs to be a separate wing, separate floors, something for the more seriously mentally ill patients.
Yes.
They should not be in the general population, and it probably needs to be constructed with different type cells, and I'm sure there are other facilities we can look at that have been built recently that probably have a model for that. I don't know where they are, but I would hope we could get that type of information.
Well, we do know where they are. Miami is one we talked about.
Right.
And maybe in the context of this conversation, if we, I'll give you the opportunity to kind of stay focused on what I would characterize as the traditional detainees, the ones who are don't have behavioral or mental health issues, because that is a group that we had some conversation about that this morning. And the reality of it we're seeing built in other communities, there is a separation between the traditional incarcerated and the folks who need behavioral mental health support. In secure facilities, don't get me wrong. As we learned this morning, a lot of our inmates are coming in here, aren't taken over to UF Health for mental treatment, behavioral and health issues being there. So I don't know, maybe it makes sense for you to stay more focused on their traditional housing incarceration, and I'm just thinking out loud. I think you can put it in here, but as you correctly said earlier on, there is going to be some crossover, and I know that's going to be an area that facility services, holistic services group is going to be looking at as well.
Right.
But I am interested in hearing more about the programs too, so that we know that for the traditional detained individual, what is happening in the facility to help them in the recidivism process.
Can I make one other point? And I don't, is the infirmary or healthcare, general healthcare, a part of this? Or is that?
We talked about the infirmary this morning with respect to the redundancy and the importance of having it as a part of the intake process. When they go through the medical examination, which, as I understand, that area also is very short right now in terms of adequate service and space for that service. But beyond that, we are now carting a lot of folks or taking them over to UF Health, when if we had an infirmary on site, they would save some of that time and cost associated with the supervision and the transportation to another facility.
Can I add one other point, if I can? One of the things that I mentioned Tuesday night was to look at our UF Health and their finances. I'm learning more that our indigent care contract includes inmates that go over to UF Health. What I don't know today is what percentage of the inmate health is the indigent care.
Mm-hmm.
Is that 5%, 10%, or even more? And as you just said, if more of those inmates could be kept in the jail and be treated appropriately, and we could reduce those transfers, because it's just not the transfer. The sheriff's office is responsible for the security of those people as well,
which is a significant expense in itself. So there are many, many reasons to keep inmates within the jail, if at all possible, and treat them versus sending them over to UF Health. So there are a number of dynamics here. And what I don't understand, in addition to that, is the incentives for NAFCARE today. What are their incentives to keeping that inmate in the jail versus just pushing them over to UF Health? So I'm going to get into some of that just from a UF Health standpoint.
Okay. And I think, and Chief, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the numbers I saw, and I think you were right on the spot there, President Salem, 38%, I believe, of the current inmates are on some type of mental health
I can medication. Tell you, yeah, today we have a total of 870 inmates in the facility that's on some kind of mental health medication.
Yes.
Yep.
And what's the total population today?
Right now at the jailhouse by itself is 2,600.
Okay.
With the three facilities together is around 35.
So if we could, knowing that there are others diving deeper into this, if we could go into the, as Chairman Borland was talking about, the other programs that we have, and then some of the challenges, numbers, challenges that we have there.
Well, the programs that we have, they're more so, they aren't beneficial for when the inmate gets out to get them back into society with a job, a skill. We need more programs, because the programs that we have now, we have a few. We have a horticulture program where they teach them gardening, and they get a certificate in that, and they can go off and get a job. We have another program where they get a certification with food service, and they can go off and get a job. But basically, those are the only ones that's beneficially for helping them when they get out. We have people coming to us that want to bring programs in. Like, I got a guy that wants to bring in a program where they teach the inmates to get their CDL license. They'll do all the schoolwork while they're incarcerated, and once they get out, they'll go on and take the driving test, and then they'll have a certification. They can go get a job driving trucks. We have another program. We got a dredging program that's coming in, but this lady is bringing in her own funding because she know we have problems with getting funding. We have a yoga program that the lady that's bringing in the dredging program, she started that program up. She got the judges involved and had her program court ordered for yoga. But they just come in and they have to be sentenced, and they get sentenced to yoga.
You mentioned, you know, and I would like you to continue, but I wanted to not forget this. You mentioned lack of funding for some of those programs, and I think everyone
here... No funding. We don't
Well, that's what I'm saying. I want to make sure we don't lose sight of what you just said.
Right.
Because I think everyone would agree. We would want to try to do whatever we can for those inmates to be able to give them the opportunity to get certifications, get things that help them when they get out,
right,
that they stand a much better chance of being productive members of society rather than a recidivism cycle, because they're only getting out and doing what they already knew to do versus,
right,
I have the certification to do this, and I see the pathway in front of me, and I'm going to be a productive member of the Jacksonville society going forward.
Right.
But we've got to be able to enable that while we have them, and we have the ability to do that.
That's what I want. None of our programs that we have does that. That's what I've been trying to do. I've been trying to get programs in that's like, if we can partner with FCCJ, they got a program in. Well, you can work on air conditioning. You get a certification for that.
Well, I just want to make sure we stay on track. We're not talking programs and funding programs. We're talking about building facilities that programs like these can be operated in.
Right. And
so let's get back to the conversation about the facilities you have now and how much more do you need in terms of space
and
facilities?
We'll need way bigger rooms.
All right. So talk about what you have now in terms of facilities and what you project future needs might be to allow more programs to come into it. Because the programs, if they have no place to go, there's no point for them coming into the building.
Right.
So you need to have the facilities to accompany those programs, and recognizing, too, JSO isn't going to operate those programs.
Right.
They're going to have to be done by outside agencies.
They're going to be done by outside entities.
Correct.
We just need the
So talk
funding.
About the facility itself.
Yeah, what
so,
do you have right now?
Right
and
now,
to be able to do the things we're just talking about, that's why I wanted to lay that base of what you just said so that we could get at the facilities part of it.
Yeah, well,
what
like
would
I
you
said,
really need versus what do you have right now facilities-wise?
Like we'll need bigger space because we'll with the CDL program, it'll need an area where they can have simulations. So we would need, just like I said, a lot of our programs are going to need internet access because we need to have virtual learning. So we have TV monitors. We have these TV monitors, these smart TVs that one of our partners purchased, and we can't use them because we can't get on JSO's internet. So they're just sitting in my office, my sergeant's office, and one of my officers' office, three TVs that if we had them in use, they could be getting virtual lessons on these TVs, but we have no capability of getting them online.
Okay.
So that's one of our challenges.
Yeah.
That's
the
microphone. Gee,
the there was a hand mic there somewhere. Oh, okay.
Yes, and the reason for that is what's known as CJIS, Criminal Justice Information Systems. So basically, if internet is going to be provided to the inmate population, it's going to have to be on a completely different internet system. And it cannot tie into that law enforcement system at all. So basically in the building of it, you'll be looking at least building two types of systems, technically three, if you continue to have the 287G project or the ICE unit, because they're on another system.
Judge Kofer is saying now four. He went to three and then to four when you brought up the fourth one. So
we have our own internet.
Gotcha. But that's a point well taken. We need four different plateaus to operate on.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's get back to the brick and mortar, though.
Well,
let's talk about that.
Would you? Yeah. And speaking of that, would you? And I'm sure you didn't take a tape measure, but
you
know roughly what size those what you call classrooms are. They aren't very large. But if you had to guess, how many feet wide by how many feet long on those four levels?
Hmm.
You know, well, you said they'd hold 25 students, right?
About 25 students.
And that's packed, because I saw those desks
in
there.
That's
totally packed with students and nothing else in there. So I just wanted to put that on the record, too, to show. And then when you get us those numbers, that will help show, you know, the adequacy of the facility as it currently stands compared against the needs.
If I could make a recommendation on that, I know that the state has already has that established for students throughout the state, and you could take those same numbers of square footage per student and implement that into the jail system.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. And if you can just tell us how things are right now and the students, and then use that the appropriate standards, yes, that's great.
Can I chime in on this? If not, it's perfectly fine.
If you have something real quick, go ahead. But then otherwise, we can do it during public comment if you'd like to.
I yield my time.
Oh, okay. Okay, thank you. Were there other programs, as Chairman Boylan was talking about, programs that you have that you don't have the right structure facilities to be able to adequately conduct those programs as you should?
We got an entrepreneur program out in at MCC, but just like I said, our classrooms are so small.
Which is out of Lanny Road, right?
Yes, at Lanny Road, Montgomery Corrections. And the classroom that they're holding those that class in, it is really small. So when they need to do projects and stuff like that, it's a challenge for them to try to do them adequately. But basically, it's just space. We're limited on space.
Okay. Yeah, if any...
And CTC, I have very little space at CTC. We are all sharing one little section at CTC. We're sharing it with Polycon. They had coordinator at one point in time. It's everybody's in there sharing that one little room. And it's a small room. It's a GED lab also. So we have to lock up the computers when when we're not in there, because it's like I say, Pearson Viewer is real particular about nobody having access to those computers. So, but we share that one room at CTC, so it's okay. A challenge over there for those programs.
Okay,
also.
Thank you.
Do we have floor plans available that we can take a look at each floor and see how they're implemented? I mean, visually it would be helpful if we can take existing floor plans to see just what the square footage is.
I had it noted.
Yeah, I think it'd be helpful to take a look at the pictures.
Yes.
And sort of a diagram of each floor and how they're broken out.
Set. Okay.
Okay. Then the next area we're going to cover, but they had meetings elsewhere, so we won't be able to cover the medical mental health facility layout versus what is needed. But we'll hit that the next meeting, the front end of the next meeting. We will cover medical, mental health, facility, and also transportation.
And dental.
You know, also dental associated with medical. They do have some dental care, but obviously very limited. And very small space to be able to do that. So we will cover those four areas. With three of them being related, the first part of the next meeting. How about, and this is a structure thing, but you guys have made some adjustments based on the numbers, but just the ability to do basic things like personal hygiene for the inmates. What adjustments have you had to make because of the lack of facility or the overcrowding situation in each one of the areas?
Well, for the inmate population, we have went under a grant called the Prison Rape Elimination Act, and we had to construct some barriers for when the inmates are in the showers. So we have a barrier in front of each shower so that this can't be openly viewed while they're showering. Inmates that are in boat bed housing, we have to empty out.
Could you explain the boat bed housing?
Well, we have a portable bed units that we refer to as boat bed, but they're portable bed units where an inmate sleeps on top of a bunk that has to be 12 inches off of the floor, no less than that. So when we are overcrowded, we would have to bring out a portable bedding unit. Previously, when our smaller dorms were 24 inmates to a cell, we would have the portable bed units out into the day room. 2007, we included a third bunk into the cells. And at this time, that would make it 36 into that smaller dorm. Currently now, we still are having to use the portable bed units in those dorms because of the elevated number.
So those individuals on the portable beds, they're out in the general area. They don't have any privacy, or you don't lock them down at nighttime. Yes. They're out in the general area.
Yes, they cannot be secured. They sleep out in the day room. And that's part of the issue.
But part of that, and that's why I wanted to bring it up, part of what you do when you're in that situation is you take one or two cells offline, and no one is living in those cells, so that those people in the overflow and the general area can then go in for personal hygiene purposes, and they all use the ones that are out in the general area all use the same ones at different times.
Yes. When we have to assign a portable bed unit house or a restroom, we empty out one cell, and the individuals that are sleeping on the portable bed units, they all would use that one restroom for their facilities, brushing the teeth, using the restroom, things like that. So there can be up to at least 7 inmates in the smaller dorms that could use that one restroom. If it goes over that number, we open up another cell for them to be able to use.
But it seems like from the tour 2 days ago that's been employed in various places, not just, you know, on a temporary basis. That seems to be more the norm in some of those floors.
Yeah.
This is shifting gears quite a bit, but, you know, obviously laundry is a big issue, big challenge, multiple floors, multiple locations. What do those numbers, large numbers and that equipment, what, you know, what do you actually need versus what do you actually have facility-wise?
During the tour, I was able to display our laundry room, and we had, seven washers and I think 5 dryers. And that's for the whole population of the 2,600 inmates that we currently have. We change out the uniforms for each inmate twice a week, and the bedding at least once a week. So that's a continuous project. We wash them, dry them, fold them up, get them prepared for the next delivery date. So that's a continuous issue. When those go down, you know, just have to...
So you can keep up if they're all working properly, but if any of them go down, then there's where your challenge is.
And officers end up having to stay later or come in on a weekend day to get caught up on some things. So that's, you know, that's with personnel and staffing, it's a hard thing to do. But they end up staying late or they'll come in another day.
Okay, thank you. Now, on a tour, you said there's a requirement, a state requirement, on time that they're allowed to be out of their cell in what's called a recreation area, but obviously there's nothing there. It's just an old basketball court, almost like a balcony, if you will, a big balcony, with no equipment or anything in there. What's the state requirement for number of hours that they're to be in the recreational area? And if the facility were built as you believe it should to meet those requirements as well as give them more to actually be able to do than what's currently happening, what would that all look like?
Currently, each floor has a recreation field. Yard, second floor up to the sixth floor. Only 100 inmates can be on the recreation yard at a time. The state requirement is for each inmate to have outside recreation up to 3 hours a week. Rain permitting, weather permitting, you know, we have inclement weather, we have to make adjustments. Currently, we are above and beyond. We're doing 7 days a week when we can. We're trying to make some adjustments to that, but the state standard is 3 hours a week.
But is there any equipment in those areas, or is it just an open area like we saw during the tour?
We have 2 basketball goals in there. We would give them we'll provide them a basketball, and they will play basketball or walk around or do their regular exercise. No other equipment is on the recreation areas.
But based on the numbers, how difficult is that to cycle everyone through to be able to do that?
It's we do it right now. Since we changed our makeup and layout, we do it in the evenings. Trying to get to both sides out in one evening is usually a challenge before we do secure the lockdown for the evening. We continue to try to be creative in getting them out, you know, in a timely manner.
Okay.
And it's pretty much voluntary. You know, the inmates of this, they volunteer to go out there. Some don't want to go to rec.
You have to offer it.
So you offer it.
But it's their choice.
Yes, it's their choice.
Okay.
And the females, they have basketball and a volleyball. But the males tend to just want to play basketball. But the females, they have a volleyball and a basketball.
Yeah. Okay.
From what I saw, it was not really outside. It's not open to the sky. It's not open to sunlight. It was was under roof.
Yeah, the one we saw was roofed and had three walls.
It's like windows. It has, at the top, it has gates, and it has windows around it. So they can see the sky, they just can't see people.
Okay. How about visitations? What's the current policy and other challenges with being able to offer all the inmates that opportunity for visitations from either their lawyer or their family members?
Our current visitation, we went to the tablet visitation. Currently, they want to have a free visit. We have personnel or the family members come down to where the court area is, the J1 courts, and we have they can visit for 2 hours a day, 2 hours a week per inmate. So where they would schedule that.
But you say tablet. They're not, like, you know, through the
not
screen.
Not face-to-face. We have
when did that change?
That was during COVID.
During COVID.
We changed those during the COVID era. So when people was not able to come into the facility, we came up with a way to still allow them access to their family members. During that time, they would have the tablet, and they would have the free access for visitation through the tablet.
So currently, family members aren't coming in to the facility for the visit?
Not face-to-face.
Okay. How about their lawyers, the lawyer visits?
The lawyers, they are still,
coming
able
in.
To come in. But we do have Polycom access that they are able to use. But some attorneys still want to have face-to-face with their clients. But we do have access for them to utilize the Polycom system.
Okay. How many of those units do you have, those for the face-to-face? I know there's about...
Okay. Yeah, each floor would have at least two on each side, so a minimum of four on each floor.
That would be pretty typical going forward, on average, to say you want four per... I'm just trying to get a sense as to how many more units would you need?
Moving forward, like the visitation area that we had for regular visitation, if we were able to do some kind of construction to have that attorney client privilege, you know, where they can talk through the glass or put those monitors in there, that would be great because that would open up more.
Charlie's itching to weigh in, and I'm glad you are. Thank you.
I was going to hold this until later in the process, but there are two issues in terms of visitation that we have concerns about, and they both center around the amount of time it takes to really execute a visit. In the Bay Street Jail, the old jail, you could go in, you could have a client meeting you within about 5 minutes. Now the process with this present jail is it takes on average 20 to 30 minutes until we walk in the front, go up, and a client gets to us to the visitation room. This is because we walk in, we register, they put our visit on the computer. I assume it goes up to the floor. We get up to the floor. They then have to contact the pod officers, and then it's just happenstance whether we get a client back quickly, but typically it's 20 minutes, I would say, on average. The Polycom system, the public defender's office actually installed it. We installed initially, I think, about 30 units. We use it with the Regional Conflict Council. They're the only other attorney group that uses it. I get pressured a lot by private attorneys to provide access to it, but the 30 units we have are just horribly insufficient to meet the needs of our office in terms of, if you understand that we represent a high percentage of the people who are in custody, and I've got 60 lawyers in Jacksonville alone using 30 units.
Is that your equipment, Charlie?
We purchased the equipment. We ran the electric. We had the actual cabinets manufactured.
Is that all still in place, or did that come out after COVID?
No, it's still in place.
Okay.
The court system, because they did not have any system in place, borrowed 10 of our units, I think it was, Mike.
About that.
about 10 units just so they could run court during the worst part of COVID. We pretty much have all the units back, but that really put us in a bad way during COVID. But we just, it's just, there are two aspects to it. Numbers, we certainly need, we'll have to have more of them, but we need to find a way as part of design of the system where we can get the inmates to the units quicker.
Okay.
Aside from that, I'm sure the private bar is going to want some sort of system of access, and I think the court system, Mike could probably talk about this, the court system will probably want some parallel system for those occasions where a court needs to have an inmate come to court, whether for a domestic violence hearing, a civil hearing, divorce hearing, something of that nature, and it's not feasible to bring over one inmate for a particular hearing. So, but it's really a design issue. It's a placement issue. And trying to figure out how...
Is there any of that process, not just structure, but is there any of that process that we could work on, or is it pretty much as best it can be given our current situation?
I know at time, you know, we have talked with the prior director of the jail about the issues on how long it takes to get clients to the polycoms or down to our interview rooms. Sometimes it gets better, sometimes it doesn't. I think it's in part the problem is created by design,
right,
and staffing issues at the
okay
jail.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. And then we went to a new system where with CMS you can schedule the inmate downstairs and it'll pop right on the officer's computer. And they can see in real time, this person needs to go down for a polycom visit. Now we have a new system and it doesn't do that. So they have to go to another screen. So they might be on a different screen when they're being scheduled. And that's probably the problem with them not getting them down as fast as they should.
So a lot of structure and system automation.
Right.
You know,
and just like I said, they need more polycons.
Okay.
Yeah, about a year ago, we had developed and actually designed and had a proposal from a firm in Texas that could build more of a phone booth design. And we actually got to the point of going and trying to locate where we could place them that would be closer down in the living area so you wouldn't have that four or five officer having to be involved to get people to the polycom units. It was just the way things were, it just didn't work out. We were very close to ordering, and then it just didn't.
Well, thank you for that, because that's perfect for, you know, what is much better look like for a different design, different layout going forward, you know. But if there's any aspect of that we can adjust to make things better short term, we certainly want to pursue that. Yes, sir.
Councilman, during COVID, there were a lot of strains on that system. And we did go through, when we knew the court was going to be using some of those, we went through and did add some, you know, upgrades to some of what, I still call him Judge Kofer because he's still a judge to me, Judge Kofer's stuff. And we have a few items over there. One of the other things we were asked, what I was asked to do, was to create some type of a scheduling program for JSO. And we did that with local funds, but we created it. It's very close to being able to go live. But the intention of that was, because sometimes when Judge Kofer tries to get somebody in front of a polycom, there's a 45-minute or an hour wait because there may be an incident going on that floor, or it just could be a staffing problem at that moment. So we wanted to set up a scheduler so that JSO can schedule when they know they have manpower at a certain site or a certain time, and they'd have a little bit more control over when those were needed, instead of it kind of being they walk in the front door and say, hey, we need to use a polycom. So we are working with the city right now to try to get that live, and then, you know, do some more testing. So that will help, but it's like Judge Kofor said, there's not enough of those devices to do, you know, with the amount of inmates that we have, it's just not enough.
Okay. All right. Thank you. If we could now shift, and if there's anything else program-wise or any other areas that someone would like to explore, please let me know. But for now, I'd like to shift to the facilities and how adequate or not they are for the staff. What are things we could do facilities-wise, adjusting facility to be able to accommodate the staff a lot better? And if you would, you both could speak to that. I would appreciate it. Like, there are things like, let's say, locker rooms, showers, parking, meeting rooms. Maybe even, I saw on one of your lists, daycare. Are there things that would the current facility just doesn't allow you to do that ideally, if you could make structural facility changes to support the staff better, what would that look like?
You know, one thing that we've been currently working on, I think is we're almost to the point to start getting it installed, is the fence around the employee parking lot. That's going to help us with security of that east parking lot of the facility. Currently, we have all of the correctional officers, all of our contracted personnel, all of the personnel that works in the PMB, well, most of the personnel in the Police Memorial Building all use this one parking lot. And during the daytime, it's hard to park. There's not enough parking spaces.
So where do they end up parking? What do they end up doing?
So they have given up the parking meters along the side closer to Maxwell House, and actually there was a grassy area right across Bay Street that we were using. They have now moved the fire museum on that end, so that's kind of been limited. So, and then you have them parking on the islands in the parking lot. So that parking area is not sufficient for them.
Let me speak to that for a second. Again, the question really is, what kind of parking would you need in the future? Not today, but to the today question, we have a conversation with DIA about the prospect of parking slots inside the Yates garage. We're also looking at the auditorium garage and some kind of shuttle to address that, because we know over the course of the next multiple years, as you know, the other side of the street gets developed, that parking isn't going to be available to you. So we've got to address that in the short term. But in terms of the long term, how many people at a given time are in the building, and how many parking spots you need to accommodate them?
Well, we have a total of, not all at one time, we have a total of 700 correction officers.
Sure.
That we are.
But how many in the building at a given time? Let's say if you've got 700, I'm assuming that's two shifts, so that's roughly 350 a shift, give or take.
So on the day shift, we would have, say, 100, and well, it takes 82 to 92 to run a shift. And then with our support staff, that's another 30 or 40. So that's just for the officers.
Right. But then you got visitors, and you got other contractors, et cetera.
Right.
So you're looking at 250, 300 parking spots, give or take?
No less than 300.
No less than 300. In the future facilities, at 300 slots. Parking slots.
Yeah, I wouldn't go more less than that.
Okay.
And then you got to take into account we have shift change, so we have to have
people are going to come and come to go. So yeah, you're going
to
have some of that
for them to come into.
Absolutely.
All
right.
Okay. And what about other facilities like Chairman Boylan was just talking about in the future? You know, you guys, I'm having in front of me some of your work you guys did before City Council even started looking into this. You've been doing this kind of work in what you called your new jail Toyota Camry version and your Mercedes version. If it's your Mercedes version, what would that look like for facilities to support your staff in addition to the parking?
Lounge room for officers. They don't have anywhere to really go and lounge. They have M6 when they go to eat, but they would really enjoy an area if they can go on a break.
Take a break.
Yeah.
and to relax. Or, you know.
Did you say dining facility? Or
a lounge facility.
A lounge, okay.
Yeah.
There is a dining facility?
Yeah, we have a we have M6. That's officer dining, but it's not all great, but it's there.
A locker room would be another asset. We have a locker room currently now, but it's on the lower level of the facility, and that area is one of the areas that gets hit by some of the flooding. Mm-hmm. We just recently changed the floor out again, so that, you know, that floor in that area is always getting hit. The shower facilities haven't been the best to utilize. So, but if we don't do a upward structure, it would be better. We won't have the flooding, so that would go away.
The number of locker facilities you have presently?
We have.
Again, ignoring the condition, present condition, but what do you need in terms of locker space, shower space,
et cetera? We still need, in that facility, we need about 500, 600 lockers.
Okay.
For the male and female.
What do you have right now?
Currently, we probably have about, 400?
And we have portable. We added lockers because we don't have. We have.
You're talking about inside the locker room.
Yeah, inside the locker room, but we added those other lockers. So,
right. You know, so inside.
We ran out of space for lockers for all of the officers, so we had to bring in additional lockers.
So you need another 100 or what more than what you currently have?
It'll be another 100.
So a total of 500, roughly 500. Right. Okay.
Facilities. One other thing was not an officer issue, but we have an emergency release panel that's an issue in our facility. It was originally designed if we had to do an emergency release of an inmate that's secured in a cell that couldn't get out, or we needed to immediately open up a whole wing of cells. Right now, that system is pretty much not inoperable. Mm-hmm. When we have inmates that's secured in the cell and we can't get them out during an emergency, we have to get with our building engineers to.
But so, in terms of the future facility, you're still looking for that kind of emergency release system.
We would have to have something better shape because right now this facility is 32 years old.
Okay, no.
So we need something.
Chief O'Neill, block out existing. We're talking future here, okay?
Yeah, so if we had that, we just had to have something to be more durable, okay. Longer lasting. Yeah, but that's about it.
What are other staff? Are there any other staff type facility things?
No, I'm sorry. The chair continues to. We're talking about the future, and I admire his persistence because we keep wanting to look back, but he appropriately we got to look forward.
Going forward.
Anything else?
That's about all I can think of right now.
Okay, I want to offer, were there other like court related facility of the future type comments you'd like to make of what you all would like to see?
Well, aside from obviously more interview rooms so that, you know, for the next thing that comes through as well. We want to see the data sharing between JSO, PD, state attorney, the court, the clerk, and all the other stakeholders to make sure we're not leaving that behind. That's something long-term and short-term, but we'd rather see it in the short-term before we even get to the new jail. Those are things we can be working on now.
And
some of the things that we
and
do.
And what does that do? You talked about the in-processing, you know, the intake part. We're not going to go into that. That's not our issue. But overall, what do those improvements enable or help with?
If we when the arresting officer is sitting in the Sally Port doing the paperwork, he's creating an arrest and booking report
electronically.
I'm sorry, on a laptop. Then that kind of gets inside. Once it gets inside, it gets turned into paper. But if that could be transmitted at that point to the clerk of court, and the clerk of court could create a case number that we all use to do like the releasing of the first appearance folks. Those are conditions on probation and things like that. That would greatly help
speeds some up of the that, process.
Yes, sir.
It wouldn't only speed up the process, but the number of man hours that would cut back on, because you have 2, 3, and even 4 people
uploading,
basically doing
re-uploading
the same thing,
same
just
information.
Their agency,
right.
And not to mention the paperwork monster that this thing, a single case can create, and it's. I've literally been working on this for 20 years, to be honest with you.
Now, we had this conversation this morning a lot, as a matter of fact. Yeah. Mike, you weren't here to share in it. And there was some question whether or not a silver bullet exists. I don't know what does, per se. But we are talking continuity of information from JSO to the clerk of courts to the justice system, correct?
Yes, sir.
Making sure even as simple as a single identification for someone. It would be a great start in that process.
Yes, that's correct. I mean, and I know of at least 3 calendars are created for one court,
mm-hmm,
by the different divisions, instead of having one master that fills everybody's bill.
Yeah.
But like, as Mike was saying, that officer pulls up, he's got everything electronic, he sends it to the jail accepts it. They then have to burn a paper docket, mm-hmm, to scan it, to send to the clerk of court, and it only gets worse from there.
Well, I've had a couple of conversations with the administration already. I, as we take a look at Randy White's working group with respect to the existing facility for the immediate future, I think we need to put this into that mix as well, because we don't want to wait 5 or 7 years or however long it's going to be to build a new facility to incorporate that kind of system. You want that system up and operational as soon as you can possibly get it.
And based on experience, and to your point, when I was at the jail, at the old jail, mm-hmm, 400 East Adams, when we moved to the new jail that's now 32 years
right.
old, and when we moved into the courthouse.
Were you 12 at the time?
I was about 13, yes.
Okay.
Sir, pretty close. But
I remember it.
Yeah. So at that time, and speaking from an officer's standpoint and the people that have to be on the boots on the ground, they're already going to have 5 years down the road. They're going to have to learn a new facility and a new way of doing things and writing all of these procedures to make things work.
Mm-hmm.
The last thing they need to do is tackle something else like technology and all the changes that we're suggesting. So that is something that literally could be done on the front end, them already be well introduced into that, and then move forward into the next, hopefully the next phase, which would be a new jail.
Let me ask this question of Sarah Tracy. Is the information you're getting from us helpful so that when you can go back to us and say, okay, now we get a sense of what your facility is today and what you're looking for in the future, so that you can come back to us and give us some sense of what to help this working group getting their arms around recommendations in the near future.
And you as well.
And you as well. Yeah, of course. Go ahead. But is this helpful? Well, let me ask you that question.
The tour was eye-opening.
Okay.
I live in the construction industry, which I thought was the slowest industry in the world.
That's great.
But in the 80s, we gave up paper.
Mm-hmm.
And what I saw there was ladies filling out, stacking, separating, another lady coming and picking that group up and putting them in paper files.
Right.
And then someone else took them and put them in a filing cabinet. And then the question was asked, is there anything in that paper file that's not on that electric digital copy?
Right.
And the answer was no. Someone needs to manage and take the authority to say, we're not doing that.
But globally, in terms of getting answers to the questions that you need to be able to come back to us and say,
definitely,
this is the kind of facility you need to build, this is the kind of IT system you need to have to operate.
In a big picture sort of way, yes.
Yes, okay. I just want to make sure you're getting what you want.
And I will tell you, we get a hard copy docket and that we have to go back to
and upload it.
And have one person put it into our case management system physically.
Yes.
Instead of just clicking thing and it just populate.
If we had any sense of the man hours involved in all of this and what that costs us as taxpayers, it would be
it's unbelievable.
Mind-boggling, for sure.
Do you have anything else?
No, I just wanted to make certain that, you know, we're getting where you need to be and getting the subject matter expert to help you to come back and say, these are the kind of facilities you need to build based upon the needs that you all have expressed to us. And I just want to make sure we're getting close to that goal line.
Was there anything else that you had mentioned before
we
haven't explored today?
Well, it wasn't so much that, but I just to give you a little insight as to what in the crossover from this morning's conversation, we talked about J1 or the first appearance, whether or not that should be in the existing or the new facility. And we need to make a determination. Judge Kofor, I think you're going to work on that to see. I mean, we need for the court systems and the JSO, et cetera, to drive the process, but we need to make sure we're delivering what they want with respect to that. There was a lot of conversation this morning also about the one-on-one time between, you know, counselors and public defenders with the inmates. We had that conversation again today. I think that's very helpful with respect to that. And there was, again, crossover, though not part of their group. We had MHOP here this morning talking about their program. And I think that's a microcosm of what we envision, perhaps, within the holistic services side of the work that might bring down the pressure of having a 2,600-bed facility that is for, you know, those who need to be incarcerated, you know, because of their, you know, because of who they are and the crimes that they've committed, as opposed to facilities where people need to be secured facilities, but not necessarily in an incarcerated jail kind of environment.
Right. Very good. Was there, you know, we have two public comment cards. I do want to get to those. Was there anything else, you know, substance-wise or input-wise for the discussion today before we do that? Yes, please. Do you want to share the microphone there, please, so we can get that on the record?
So I have two questions. First one is about storage and warehouse. Obviously, you have a lot of dry goods, fridges and freezers. What is your capacity with the extent of new inmates?
That's a great question. Let's toss in there, too, you know, emergency facility, generator, storage, you know, tank, et cetera.
Well, we have storages. We have stuff that we call hurricane supplies, the emergency supplies. We have a warehouse down on Catherine Street for the jail. We have where we have overages of extra mattresses, bolt beds, uniforms.
You've got a dry goods storage
facility.
And we've
got a dry goods storage in the kitchen,
which needs
to be bigger.
Number needs to be.
Yes.
But it is. But also in terms of the daily intake of food and other supplies that are perishable supplies.
Yeah, we have a storage down there in the kitchen. Our whole kitchen just needs to be revamped.
Mm-hmm.
It needs to be. It's not worker friendly now because of the way it's designed.
Okay.
We have the hot bar line is not operable. You know, it's not working. So a lot of stuff in that kitchen just needs to be redone.
So we're talking about the new kitchen. We're not talking about the existing kitchen.
Well, we just need new equipment in that kitchen. A lot of equipment.
Well, as far as the storage goes, or like, could you, and that may be other folks, but if you could, for the next time, if you could say, okay, with this population that we project that he talked about earlier, what would that look like as far as, you know, storage area for...
It'll have to be redone because right now they have... the food is supposed to be so high from the floor, and they have, like, crates. They don't have actual shelves. They have... I don't know. Did y'all go in the storage area?
But if this makes sense, if we could, you know, along the lines of what Chairman Boylan was talking about, if we can... You know, as we go forward with each thing, say, here's what it currently is, but given the projections of you know, inmates, what do we need it to be? You know, right now we have 5,000 square feet of dry storage. We really need 8,000 minimum of dry storage. We have 3,000 of refrigerated storage right now. We actually need 9,000 refrigerator storage, so those perishables, when one goes down, we don't lose everything, which I've seen happen.
Right.
And then we have to go with other food until we can get perishables restocked. You know, if we could get data on what we really need it to be, given our projections of inmate populations versus what it is right now. Okay. So we say it is this right now, but we need it to be this in the future. If we could think in those terms and provide that data, that would be very helpful.
Yeah, currently with the food service, they order weekly for the amount of stuff they would need for the week. So they are currently using that for their storage space. But we will look at the get the numbers for the next meeting, what we have.
Okay, good. And I just use that as an example. It could be anything we're talking about. I think you've seen a common theme here. If we can get that for all aspects of the facilities,
okay,
as we're talking about them and going forward, the more we have the data of what is versus what we really need going forward, that allows us to then collectively come together and design and implement a series of structures, you know, so that we have more than enough, and we have backups, and we have generators, we have the other things that we need when something goes down. It isn't a severe emergency situation. The more we can think of things in that term as we go forward and get the data, get the hard information, that will help everybody who's going to be part of this be able to long-term get the structures that we need in place. Anything you want to add to that, Chairman? Okay. Oh, yes, please, go ahead.
And, Councilman, just one quick question, and perhaps I missed it and I apologize, but the projections as far as what is going to be needed, how far did we push out, or what year did we push out to?
I think there's a couple of thoughts there. Number one, obviously, the experience, we're not going to do this again for another 30 years, give or take.
Right.
I'm not saying we need to build for 30 years, because we might be able to build a facility that has capacity for the short term that we can grow on it. We can take a look at it in that capacity as well.
And that's what I was hoping on. I know yes. that the average public building is slated to last 45 years.
Correct.
And that's a building like the courthouse that's open 8 or 10 hours a day, Monday through Friday for the most part, with the exception of weekend first appearance. But when you're talking about the jail, you're talking about 24/7, 365, so yeah, that number's
I don't want to build 25 floors because we anticipate need 25 floors in 40 years from now, but I want to build 15 floors based on the foreseeable future, but have capacity to build. I'm not suggesting going up, but I'm just using that as an example. I think we want to build for the foreseeable future. And based upon that, and we have not talked about it much, but in terms of beyond the technology, but the housing of that technology, and what does the future look in terms of adjudication and, you know, recidivism and all those kind of things that come into play. It's going to change over the course of time invariably.
And I will say one thing with the current jail is that one thing that was not looked at was the push in technology and how much it changed in 32 years.
We can't ignore AI in this process.
So the thought of putting that extra space in there to run Cat9 and areas for servers and so forth wasn't even a thought.
Sure.
So, back in my day, you know,
and that's
if you had a pager back then, you were.
Yep. Well, that's the kind of thinking that you all need to bring to the table. I mean, the people who operate it day to day is one thing. Is for what does the technology and the processing look like tomorrow? That you need to. We need the experts who are doing it today also to speak to that. Now, I mentioned AI too in the context. But go ahead and pass it down. You know, I don't know manpower challenges that we presently face in the Corrections Institute. Is technology a better solution for some of that than we're seeing now? But go ahead.
I just wanted to offer a response to your question. If the subject matter experts in the room have what we need to come back and provide you some information, I think everyone here realizes pretty quickly there are a lot of moving parts to you know, putting a project like this together, going through current state and future state. And I think what your subject matter experts can bring and help you is a project approach. There's a framework that we can help provide to make sure that there's a systematic approach to going through this process and making sure that you've collected all of the information, future state trends, best practices, all of that, and you're asking yourselves all the pertinent questions to collect that information to make sure that you've got all the answers you need moving forward. And I think to answer your question, that's probably the best value you get from us immediately is just giving you that framework.
Yeah, and that's why I was asking the question, are we giving you sufficient information? We're still in the storming mode, as you know. Mm-hmm. And but we're looking for you to come back to us and say, based upon what you have, we have heard from all of you, this is the kind of facilities we are building now or have built in the future, so that we've got something tangible that we can take forward to the group with confidence, with Council Member Miller leading the charge to say, you know, with great confidence, these are the kind of options we have before us with respect to housing and detention.
And I think we haven't talked any details on this, but I think it's also after we, and we're going to focus, you know, shifting us here into talking about the next two sessions. There are some more things, as I said, we'll talk about on what we need in these areas, medical, mental, dental, and transportation. We're going to talk about what we actually need versus what we have the first part of the next meeting, which is November 3rd. Is that correct, Carol? Okay, November 3rd is our next meeting. And then we'll then shift gears into, and this is where I encourage you three, Dan, whomever we have. I know we have some people from Tallahassee, a couple different companies from Tampa, other locations. Would like to have you all contact Carol and me to set up time and make sure we allocate whatever time you feel you need to present the information that Chairman Boylan was just talking about and you were just talking about. Want to lay that out. Some of you who have built and are building facilities right now in various locations, not only in Florida but other states, let's go through, given what you've heard from us, let's go through those plans and try to highlight those areas that will best address the needs that we have and give you guys the opportunity to present. And that'll give us a great starting point going forward on knowing what we need. And then that ties in with land that's needed and other related things, but that's down the road. So for November 3rd, our third session, and then all of our fourth session, we'll be giving you all the opportunity to look forward and show us what's possible. As far as facilities, anything else before I go to the two public comment cards I have here? Okay. Oh yes.
Just one last question: the housing classifications that you have right now. What are the biggest issues you're having with housing, apart from the mental health component? Is it got to do with older populations, like specialized populations like that?
Right now, with our misdemeanor population, that's overflowing, and our violent felons right now. Violent felons right now, we have a whole floor, there's two sides of the building down to another floor, and it's we need more space for those, because then we start combining them with the non-violent felons, because they can't be with the misdemeanors. So the violent felons is the big challenge. And the and the misdemeanors.
And what size housing cells do you currently have? Like, I'm sure you have a mixture in there.
What kind of?
The housing size cells. Is it like a 24 person dorm?
Okay, so
eight person?
Our smaller dorms, they are, can't give you the measurement, but they have 36 beds in the smaller dorm.
That's the smallest?
And if you go into the bigger dorms have 72 beds in them.
Okay. But you're currently putting three in two-person cells, right?
Right. So if it was two-person cells, it would have been 24 instead of 36. But we added a third bunk inside the cell, so it's 36 would go in there. And what the 72 is now, it used to be 48 people to a dorm. Now in those cells, it's 72.
And are they direct supervision?
Direct supervision, we have that for our juveniles and our close observation.
Okay. Thank you.
Anything else? Are you for public comment?
Yes.
You filled out one of these cards? If I would, if I can.
I'm not an official member, I think, of this committee.
Okay, if I could.
I have been called in as an expert. Oh, yeah, I'm a retired professor.
Okay.
You can let go
first. Oh, okay, okay. Ms. McGrath Wood?
Yes.
Yes, if you would, please.
Yes. I'm interested with a view to the possibility of a future jail facility in which it could be built from scratch according to perhaps federal standards. I don't know whether these two representatives on this table in front of me are aware of the model jail facility as per federal standards. There are grants available, federal grants available for such facilities. And one of their particular interests is in rehabilitation with a view not only to its being humane, but also with a view to reducing recidivism. Mr. Rahman Johnson, at the last meeting, was chairing, I believe, and he brought in some information from Los Angeles where they did a lot of community policing, got rid of the Crips and the Bloods and the Crips. I think there were two major gangs out there. But they also reduced the jail population, he said, from 10,000 to 4,800 by introducing reduction of recidivism items such as education in jail for inmates so that they're not just sitting there twiddling their thumbs. I don't know what proportion, I don't know how long they spend, first of all, on average, in the jail. I've heard they're waiting, the state prisons are full, and that so they may have extended stays, and they may as well be using their time usefully. If they don't have, for instance, a high school diploma, to do it virtually in jail.
Right. Yeah, we talked about that earlier before you came.
Did you? I'm terribly sorry. My Z trip didn't show up, so I ended up catching a ride with a neighbor. But as an educator, as a retired educator, my interest is in reducing our costs through reducing recidivism and preparing the inmates for a more productive life as citizens in the future. After they exit, and I think family contacts and perhaps neighborhood contacts where they're going to move back to with perhaps one of the pastors that their families favor, and they might be finding employment that way.
Right.
Also, there might be vocational possibilities, vocational certificates,
right.
Earning online, and even, you know, possible two-year college degrees or even four. It depends on the length of stay, right, and what they're capable of and willing to do.
Yes, thank you very much.
There is another working group called Intake Adjudication Recidivism. Council Member Peluso is heading up. That group actually met this morning, but some of the points that you talked about relevant to this committee, working group, but also very much so for that one.
Uh-huh.
Keep an eye out for that one, too.
Thank you very much for that. Yes, now we'll go to Mr. Oliver.
Colonel Oliver, address is on file. I think the direction you're trying to go with this new facility, I think it needs to be holistic. In the last committee, Council Member Peluso mentioned something about the Department of Correction. I remember it being about maybe a month ago, I had a conversation with a regional director for Florida Department of Correction, and they're telling me they're moving to more of a Norwegian style of building prisons. And I think that if this committee right here could join in that meeting, because they finna get ready to shut down a lot of their older prisons, and they turning them more into like, I've said this before, restorative justice style prisons, where you reinvest back into the individual's character, mentally, spiritually, so that they can be more productive when they get out. I think there should be an ad hoc committee meeting if they're bringing in somebody from the Department of Corrections, because it's been about a month ago, and I remember I was watching a committee meeting hearing that State Senator Jason Pizos was talking about we need to redo our whole prison systems, because the same product that they're putting back out there on the street does not give the taxpayers a return on investment. I think that we need to kind of like tailor whatever is the end outcome of this project. My number one focus is, can we bring FSCJ in to kind of help with the development and the construction of more vocational programs that uplift individuals? That's one of the key things for me. If it's one thing that I'm going to be pretty much hammering in on, is how do we bring real education into the criminal justice system. And I guess in all as such, between the Air Committee and this committee, and possibly bringing in Mr. Johnson, that Air Committee could kind of give you a bigger scope, because the Florida Department of Corrections is working on a new plan.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Oliver. And yes, we all five working groups are all under Chairman Boylan's oversight. And so the idea is, once all of our working groups are done, this is all going to be brought together. Everything is going to be brought together into one report with a series of recommendations. And so all of that will be brought together. So thank you very much for your thoughts. And I just want to thank everyone for coming today, and welcome anyone to our next meeting, November 3rd. Right now it's scheduled for 8 o'clock. We'll make sure the rooms are all properly, we've scheduled properly, but as of right now, and we'll put out any changes if there are any, but right now it's November 3rd at 8 o'clock is our next meeting. And like I said, we'll focus on a few items we weren't able to touch on today about current facilities and what what we'd like to see in the future regarding those areas. But then we're going to turn it over to designer, builder, contractor representatives for them to present to us on what right looks like and best practices associated with those projects to help us learn and be able to make a much better facility for the next 30, 35 years. So thank you all very much, and God bless you.
Michelle, yes, Lieutenant for all programs at the jail.
Yeah,
all three of us.
Who?
Yeah.
Wonder what this? Yeah, something gonna ask if he knew you. He's like, yeah, oh,
yeah, yeah, yeah. He's one of our transportation guys. Actually, he'll be out of town with us.
Yeah. He said something about the census.
That's right. I didn't see what the dialogue was going to do.
Yeah, hopefully they get that up.
That's right.
Assistant Chief, I'm Sarah Rick with ASAP. Thanks for sharing.
Danny, good to see you.